Hello, and welcome to Read It With Whiskey, the place to be if you are a sci-fi or fantasy reader. My name is Laura, and I am your host. I am a reader, writer, and whiskey drinker, here to share with you the person behind the page, the author. And today's featured author is Richie Billing. Richie is from a city called Liverpool. He got into writing fiction in about 2015 and fell completely in love. Now it's a part of his daily routine. He gets grumpy when he doesn't get time to write. Fantasy has been the genre that has captured Richie's attention most, but he doesn't just write fantasy. If he gets an idea and thinks it would make a good story, he'll write it. Richie studies the craft of writing as much as time allows, and over the years he has read book after book, stacks of articles, attended lectures, seminars, workshops, courses, and more. His debut novel, Pariah's Lament, which is what we're going to be talking about today, is actually published through Of Metal and Magic Publishing. Let me tell you what Pariah's Lament is all about. So often, it's the forgotten who possess the power to change the world. When an attempt is made on the life of Ashara, Keeper of Yor, his young, hapless advisor, Edvar, must uncover and stop those behind it. With enemies in the capital city and the belligerent Tesh, Keeper of the neighboring kingdom, Karabar, stirring trouble in the Borderlands, can Edvar hold together Ashara's brittle reign? The troubles rip through Yor, affecting an ancient race of people known as the Amest, who, in their time of utmost need, turn to Pariah Issi for salvation. Rejected by society, kith, and kin, can Issi guide the Amest to safety during the greatest turmoil Yor has known since the War of the Damned? This was a really fun and very intertwined story with multiple points of view, and I'm really excited for you guys to hear the conversation with me and Richie. So let's dive in. Hello, Richie, and welcome to Read It With Whiskey. I'm so excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yes, I'm super excited because I actually found you and your book through Of Metal and Magic, and I've had two other people from Of Metal and Magic on the show, so I'm excited to have you on. But we're going to be talking about your book, Pariah's Lament. But before we dive in, I would love for you to tell us, how did you start your writing career?
Quite weird. I never wanted to be a writer. I think I fell in love with writing in a weird sort of way in university when I was doing a lot of projects, like essays and stuff like that. And when I left university, I was missing that sort of focus. So a friend and I, we were both sort of ambling about life in our early 20s, not really sure what we wanted to do. And we started writing a sitcom. And it didn't go anywhere, but it was a lot of fun. And it was a great way to spend, obviously, a lot of time together, but just to focus your mind on a writing project. And then at the time, I was working as a lawyer because I went to law school and then worked as a lawyer for a few years, and I was just hating it. And the industry is dead now. It's really on its ass. And I just decided to quit my job as a lawyer and give writing a go full time. At the same time, I was reading a lot of fantasy books and I was getting an awful lot from them, a mental level. I was sort of a bit lost in life and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with the rest of my time on this earth. I decided then just to try and give back what these fantasy books gave me in that sort of time when I was a bit lost. And I just started writing, and then that was about 6 or 7 years ago, and I've never stopped. It's just become a daily habit.
I love that. I
absolutely love it. Yeah. So like an obsession now. Weirdly enough, I was watching a video last night with, I don't know if you've heard of Mr. Beast. He makes all mad YouTube videos anyway, and he makes good YouTube videos. But he was watching an interview with him, and he was saying how he just can't switch off. Every waking hour of the day, he's working on stuff, creating content, creating content. And I related a lot to that because I can't switch off. And I've had a lot going on the last few weeks and I've needed to switch off and I just haven't been able to. And that is what it's like for me now. It's just writing is just a part of my life and constantly, my mind's constantly going.
Yeah, I was actually watching a YouTube video. I can't recall who it was now, but it was an author I was listening to an old episode of Sasha Black's podcast, the Rebel Author podcast, and she was talking about how she was feeling guilty about working on vacation, but because she loves her passion of writing, it's like
it's a passion of hers, it doesn't feel like work. So she's one of those who can't turn off also. And the way that she was wording it kind of like gave me validation, like, I don't have to stop working if it's something I love. So it's kind of like a there's pros and cons to working all the time. But when it's your passion project, I think it's a little bit easier to to say yes. But yeah. So you have been writing for a long time then. So when you left your full-time gig as a lawyer and moved into writing, had you written anything at that point? Or were you, besides the screenwriting, you hadn't written any books or anything?
No, I'd not finished any books. So I've been writing probably for about 2 years by that point, just in my spare time.
Okay.
But pretty much a full-time job because the amount of time that you devote to it. And I decided that if it was something that I wanted to do, and if I was going to quit my job, I would treat it like going back to university, but rather than paying all them stupid college fees, I was going to teach myself. And that's what I did. I just sat down every day, and there's a lot of great resources out there for writers. I mean, Brandon Sanderson's got a full college course on there, like Fantasy on YouTube, which was just like the handiest thing ever. So I just used to sit down there, and it was like going to college, and I'd be making notes on each lecture and then studying for like any resource I could get my hands on. So books, so many good books. I think I've got more craft books on my bookshelf than fiction books, to be honest.
Wow.
I've just like invested so much time and effort into like studying everything. And there's no right way to go about anything. And I think that's what makes it such a frustrating area to study, because one person will tell you, never do this. And then another person will tell you, oh, but you can do that. And then it's like, well, you've just got to invest yourself and throw yourself into it and then slowly begin to understand how it works. And then you need to find your own methods. There's no one's methods where it works perfectly for anyone else. It's just all about what suits you.
Exactly.
And I think that's what makes it such a special thing. Because it is such a unique pursuit.
And it's unique, and it's also very individualized. Like, you're on your own, so you're doing it on your own, unless you can find a writing group that you're really involved with. I mean, that definitely helps. But a lot of it at the beginning, for a lot of authors, they're on their own and they're trying to get knowledge from all of the people. And there's so much knowledge out there to learn from also. It can kind of become like a black hole. So when I first started, I dove into the writing without ever reading a craft book. I was like, I'm just going to dive in, because if I start researching, I'm never going to stop researching. I'm never going to write. And so that was the tactic I took. So I did a different route than you did, but we both have books out there. So
no, I totally agree with your method. I think when you fall in love with something, what you want to focus on more than anything is that love and the enthusiasm, and try and capture the enthusiasm without getting yourself bogged down into rules of writing and how to write prose. I did exactly the same thing. It was only at that point, sort of a couple of years in, that I was looking back at what I'd written, and I'm like, I'm actually not very good at this.
We've all had those moments.
Yeah. So it's just when you realize that you need to invest to improve and to make positive strides in your career, then I think that's the stage. But definitely in the early phases is just write and enjoy creating. That's what it's all about.
Yes, the joy. I love it. All right. So we are talking about Pariah's Lament. So tell our listeners, what is this book all about?
Yeah, I'm awful at explaining things.
And there's so much that happens in this book, like, Richie. Yeah.
Adrian Tchaikovsky, when I was interviewing him for the podcast, I think he summarized it well. He was like, well, if I could tell that story in a couple of sentences, then I wouldn't be writing 100,000 words about it. And I was like, I'm so glad that you struggle with this as well, because I can never summarize. Basically, it's an underdog story. It follows two characters who are quite different. One is called Izzy. She's my favorite, to be honest. She was born with a birthmark on her face, and she lives in quite a rural part of this kingdom called Yor, which is Y-U-R-R. Because she has this birthmark, people think she's cursed, and she's basically ostracized from society, even by her own parents. So she's just like miserable, to be honest, and she's getting to the end of a tether. She's probably just going to suicide, go down that route. But she gets kidnapped, and I don't really want to reveal too much, but because that happens right at the beginning of the story, but she does get kidnapped and everything changes. Her life goes on a completely different trajectory. And the other character, Edvar, he is a young advisor to the equivalent of a king, which I call a keeper. Because I was talking to JM about this, and I was like, if we can't just call them kings all the time and queens.
Right.
Just to try and come up with something a bit unique. So I came up with keeper, and that all tied in quite nicely with the shared universe element of the story, because anyone who's unfamiliar with Of Metal and Magic, the stories are all set in the same universe. So there's, I don't know how many novels they've got now, but everyone is related to each other, just sort of set in different parts of the world and at different time periods, but it's all sort of contributing to this sort of greater world, collective world building. And Edvar's story, basically, he begins with an assassination attempt on the king, on the keeper. Fall into my own trap there. And he's got to try and figure out who did it, because there's a lot of enemies. There's people, and there's like the keeper's council who are like his advisors, and there's a lot of enemies on that. And then there's obviously another keeper who's staring trouble in the borders. And I think that's what the main sort of point I wanted to make with the story is that war is just caused by, well, many wars are just caused by individuals, mm-hmm. just a couple of individuals just absolutely causing absolute havoc for everyone. And I wanted to tell the story of the people who get caught up in it. Mm-hmm. And it's two characters who society expects nothing of, or they expect nothing of themselves, I think, is the more important point. And they are put in a position where they have to save the day.
Exactly.
Against the odds.
Yes. Yeah. Such a fun story. And there's so many twists and turns. And like you said, it's an Of Metal and Magic core story. And something I really like about these books is that they're all written kind of like screenwriting, where they have their episodes instead of regular chapters. And so,
yeah.
So you had the screenwriting history. Did that really come in handy then, writing this style? No.
No. I wasn't sure about the episode thing.
Okay.
At first. And then when I started writing it with this in mind, I was like, actually, there are more benefits to this than negatives. Mm-hmm. I think I was worried that when people picked up a book, they were expecting chapters. Mm-hmm. And none of it is. It is set in chapters, but they're just called different things. Mm-hmm. But many younger readers nowadays, they grow up with Netflix and they're used to things in episodes and seasons, and it works. I think they get away with it.
Yeah.
And one thing I did love about it is it obviously plays around with the traditional structure of a novel, but I don't like long chapters. Mm-hmm. I like short breaks. And I think for readers, particularly me, who can struggle with reading sometimes, it makes you feel like you're making a lot of progress. And I think if you get stuck in a long chapter, and you're like, I do this before, I was like, flick forward to see how many pages I've got left to go in the chapter. I'm like, I'm not reading anymore. So if you've got these little breaks, there's like, because each episode is split into like mini chapters. And then and one thing I used for these episodes was, there's 10 episodes in the book, and each episode, the start of each page is, there's like a short story, the fragments of a short story at the beginning of each episode, which is completely unrelated to the story, but at the same time, it tells you an awful lot about what happens. Mm-hmm. And that was quite fun to write.
Yeah. And I actually was going to ask you about that, the little episode introduction. That was kind of like a whole nother, like you said, a little short story within the whole book. And you said it was fun. That was going to be my question. Was that difficult to come up with that little content at the beginning?
Yeah, sometimes it was. But once I had a good chat with JM, who's JM Williams, is the editor of Metal and Magic and editor-in-chief. And when I was at a chat with him about what we could use it for, we agreed that it'd be a good way to tie it in with the sort of main storyline that runs through this shared universe. And JM had, I think, his first novel, it's set in from the perspective of a university professor who's researching the history of this land, and my character is a Indiana Jones type archaeologist, let's say, who goes off to follow up on this lead that this professor has discovered, and he's trying to find this city, which is the city of Eurissa, where Edvard and Izzy, they're all based. No trace of it. And as he's sort of searching around, he does eventually find something. But I think it tells you an awful lot about what comes next without actually saying anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing there anymore. And it used to be a grand city. So what the hell happened to it?
Right.
And you don't find that out in the novel.
Yeah, it's fun that everything is tied in. Well, cool. So yeah, I really like the episodic writing. I haven't tried episodic writing like this, but I know Kindle Vella is really huge. It just came out like a year and a half ago. And this book would be perfect for this whole writing type, is exactly what Kindle Vella is. So I'm wondering, like, is that going to be something of Metal and Magic goes into in the future, is getting it on Kindle Vella first and then going out into paperback?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see.
Idea.
Yeah.
I think it might work quite well for audiobooks as well.
Mm-hmm.
And podcasts.
Yeah.
Releasing an episode each week.
Yeah.
Or anything like that, really.
Yeah. I've heard of a couple different audiobooks going out as podcasts, like one chapter episode a week and going out. I'm like, that would be very entertaining.
Yeah.
I would like that. All right.
Yeah. I think one thing it was really quite helpful for was writing the book, because you split it into 10. So rather than thinking you've got to write 100,000 words, I only have to write 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then another 10,000. And then something. Yeah. So that's a good way to break it up.
Definitely. I like having those points to go off of the timeline. It's the same like reading a book. You don't want to read the long chapters. You want to read the short chapters. So same mindset.
Yeah.
All right. So you already mentioned that one of your favorites is Issy, and she was one of mine as well. I really liked her growth throughout the book. She's one of the main POVs, like you mentioned. And I just liked how she evolved throughout the story. So elaborate a little bit more on her, or maybe on a different character that you really like as well.
Yeah, I think I do. Izzy is my favorite. I think the way I wrote Edvard is I wanted to make him a little bit unlikable at the start. So part of me, I don't really like him at the beginning, but at the end, he's a completely different character. And I suppose his challenge is that he's always worried about filling his father's shoes, because his father was like a legend. Everyone loved him. And now he was like the sort of right-hand man to the king. And now Edvard was getting groomed to take his place for when he died, but it was all premature, and Edvard's been thrown into this job a lot sooner than he expected. And there's that pressure then to fill his shoes. So that is an interesting one. But I think Izzy's story is one, because she is very strong and resilient, but life has ground her down, that she just does not appreciate that she's got them qualities. And it's only when she starts to get more deeply involved with this alien race called the Amast, who kidnap her.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what's happened with the Amast, and this is, again, tying in with some of the themes of the story, is that there's war brewing between these two kingdoms, Yor and the neighbour, Karabar. And as part of, well, as a result of that sort of conflict, there's a race of people called the Amast, who have been hiding away for years. I kind of think of them as like Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So like a more of a frog like Bigfoot. But they've just been hiding away for like thousands of years. And war they've got involved basically, and they've been massacred, and now they're trying to flee the conflict. And there's only so far you can go when you're running away. Like you're fatigued, tired, hungry, thirsty, and you just have to stop. And that is basically the situation that they're in. They've had to stop, and they're just dying now, one by one, slowly, and they need help. And that's where they decide to kidnap Izzy and try and use her to communicate with the people who've been killing them to get them the help that they desperately need. And that's where I think Izzy starts to come into her own.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to sort of lead them and guide them to safety.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I really like Izzy's story. And then I think if you skip towards the very end, I won't kind of give anything away, but there's a few massive battles, and these characters don't shy away from that. If anything, I do love a heroic story and heroic moments in books, and I think both Izzy, Edvar, and there's a few other characters, there's like Vil.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they all have pretty heroic moments, and I think, I don't know what you thought about the battles, but I quite like the battle scenes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, I study a lot of medieval history, and I always try and make the battles as vivid and as real as possible. Don't shy away from any of the details. And war is truly horrific. And when these characters are going through these firsts, if you will, like what you see in sort of YA and coming of age stories, the characters are a bit older, but they've lived sheltered lives. So they've never seen dead bodies. They've never held swords. They've never killed anybody. And I always think some fantasy stories just gloss over these massive things in people's lives.
Yeah, I definitely feel that when I'm reading some fantasy books. And I really liked the battle scenes. I think I really liked that the idea of cannons was new to this world. And so that was something that a lot of characters didn't know what that sound was. And what did they call it? Yeah. Thunder, I think.
Tubes of thunder.
Yeah, tubes of thunder.
That is actually a medieval description, came from medieval history. These cannons in medieval times were absolutely useless, but no one had ever heard them. No, what the hell is that? It's like magic kind of thing. So it was really interesting playing around with that sort of perspective when you've never seen anything like this before, and it was more the fear than anything that was causing the trouble. But in this story, I actually made the cannons a bit more effective, but at the same time, they were malfunctioning, and
that was fun when I was reading those sections and talking about how they're getting the cannons from one place to another, because these things are big and huge and they don't have the technology to move them easily. So that was really fun. And then obviously seeing the destruction and the battles. And I think the name was Jem, one of the characters towards the end in one of the battles. I really liked Jem. But yeah, and then you mentioned Vil. I really liked Vil. He was one of my favorite characters too. So
yeah.
I love the character talk.
I think it's like, I just love playing with perspectives, because obviously, if you've got two main characters, then you're stuck with them for most of the story. And sometimes you need to break away. You need to show other characters in a different light. I mean, there's obviously Tesh, who's the main antagonist. And I do, about halfway through the story, it picks up his perspective then. But I do, every now and then, just dip into random characters.
Yeah.
Just to show people the different sides of the world and different perspectives on things.
Yeah, and it gives you a tie into what's going on when Izzy is doing something else, what's going on while they're planning something or traveling or doing whatever. And so giving those little insights into different characters definitely gives you more about the whole world and what's going on. So big picture stuff happens. Very cool. All right. So as writers, we all start out as readers. So I'd like to learn a little bit about some of your reading habits. So what is your favorite genre to read? I bet I can guess it, but go ahead.
I do like fantasy, as you can probably guess. But I don't read as much fantasy as I used to. I think recently I've probably moved more towards historical fiction.
Okay.
But again, the last few historical fiction books I've picked up, I haven't been grabbed by. I am a very tricky reader. So if something doesn't hook me pretty quickly, I just can't carry on.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time I forced myself to continue with the book, I think it was A Wizard's First Rule by Terry Goodkind. I can't really remember. It's an old fantasy book anyway. And I got about 300 pages in and I was just, this is rubbish. This is absolutely garbage.
Oh no.
There's like one, it's a really popular one as well. But what really annoyed me is it begins the story with this interesting female character. I think she's got magical powers. And you're led to believe that she's going to be quite significant, but as the story goes on, she's basically just the damsel in distress for another male character who's the chosen one, all that typical.
Yeah.
I just gave up on it halfway through. I was just like, I'm not doing this anymore. So I am a terrible reader, but I do like crime as well. So I read a lot of Ian Rankin. Don't know if you've ever read of Ian Rankin. And I have started work on a crime novel, fantasy elements.
I love it. Yeah, I was actually gonna ask about that. Is what are the next projects coming up?
Yeah, well, I'm editing a fantasy novel, which began life as a novella, and then I went to There was some sort of literary festival on in Liverpool where I live, and I had a meeting with a publisher, and they were decent, size, like a mid-level sized one, and they were like, "Oh, we really like the novella, but we can't publish it as a novella; it has to be a novel." So I was like, "All right, then." Went away and wrote another 70,000 words or whatever. And then I'm halfway through the edits on that now, and I decided the other month to research that publishing, see how they were getting on, because they might go for it, you know what I mean? And they've gone out of business.
Oh.
So I've gone off this path now. It's taken me like 2 years to get to this stage, but I'm determined to keep going ahead with it. I started writing a story for my girlfriend Elaine and our little dog Luna.
Oh.
And it's a story about a young mother in the middle of a war between my version of orcs. Okay. And it's just concentrated in this one area called Morrigan. It's quite a rural, hilly area. It's just what where I know. You know what right? I mean? People say, oh, I hate Western settings and like forests and stuff like that, like for fantasy, but that's just what I live in. So
exactly.
I'm always going to use it. Mm-hmm. It's a really simple story. She's basically fleeing war, so she's got to get to the border at A to B, and the story is basically her getting there, and it's crazy what goes on inside in between the 2 points. So I've had a lot of fun writing it. It's just life slowed the process down, I think, and the editing's taken a while.
The editing, yeah. Took me a year to edit my most recent book that just went out in October. And that one was very difficult to go through all of the edits. And I was just like, I was over it by the time I was done with it. Yeah. You know that feeling where you just hate your book by the time you're done with it? Yeah.
You're just telling yourself, like, this is literally the last time I'm going to read this because I can't take it anymore.
Exactly, yeah. I love it. All right. So tell us a little bit about the other books that you already have published, because you have quite a big list. Maybe give us the top three or four that you have out there.
I think Pariah's Lament is the main, this was the only novel. I've had lots of short stories published, mm-hmm. But they were just like scattered across the internet. So what I decided to do is once the rights elapsed on some of them, I just put them all in a book, like an anthology.
Yeah.
So that one's called Flying on the Ground. And then nonfiction, I have the main book is A Fantasy Writer's Handbook, mm-hmm. and I think that's the most popular book. It was when I started writing fantasy, I didn't have anything like this, and it was what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. So what I've done over the years is whenever I've learned something, I have this rule: whenever I learn something, I pass it back on. So on my website, richiebilling.com, is where this all began, and I used to write loads of blog posts and guides, basically just my notes from what I've been studying. And people found them useful, and then I decided to put them all in a book called The Fantasy Writer's Handbook, and that's what that book is. It's been doing really well, and people liked it that much, they were saying I should do a podcast. So now I'll do a podcast as well called The Fantasy Writer's Toolshed. So, yeah, I am going to do a second edition of A Fantasy Writer's Handbook next year, I think.
Okay.
I said this, but whether I get to it is another matter. Because I'm doing a book on whale building as well.
Very fun.
But, yeah, I don't know. I'll try and get it done next year. But it came out 2019, that one, and I was reading it the other day, and I was like, some of this is a bit out of date now.
Right, yeah, writing changes so much, and then you learn so much as you go. So it's like if you do write a craft book, it's like have to do a revision a second edition, third edition every couple of years just to keep up with your own knowledge. And I think that can actually be a really good tool to use as a writer, is to update that type of back work, because obviously, like you said, pass it on to the next people so they can learn from what you've learned. So very cool.
It reinforces your knowledge as well, which is always good.
Exactly. All right. So this is Read It With Whiskey, and it wouldn't be Read It With Whiskey without talking a little bit about whiskey. So, Richie, what is your favorite whiskey to drink?
Oh, well, I used to run an Irish pub, and I had a little goal to have the widest selection of Irish whiskies in Liverpool. I think I had 23 in the end. That was the highest I got to. But my favorite whiskey is Redbreast 12 Year. because it just doesn't taste like whiskey. You can just drink it all night and it'll just go down so smoothly. It's insane. So I think if you're new to whiskey and you hear people going on about, oh, that's smooth, and you're like, what are they not going on about, like, smoothness?
Yeah.
It's like basically how much of a burn that you get at the back of your throat, but you don't get that with Redbreast 12 year. It's made in the Midleton Distillery in Cork, which is the same as Jameson, but it's well better than Jameson. Like, Irish people, if it is a little tip, Irish people don't drink Jameson.
Right. Yeah, I went to Ireland. Yeah. I went to Ireland back in June of 2022, and I tried to get to a couple different places, different whiskey distilleries. I think I only made it to one in the end of it, but that was something I noticed, that like not many people were actually drinking Jameson. I mean, some were, but the majority were drinking some of the other specialty stuff, because there's so many different whiskeys over there. I mean, you got to try them all. All right.
Yeah.
So where can people find you and your books and follow along with your author journey?
So best place to go is probably richiebilling.com. That's my website. Find everything on there. You can join mailing list. You can join writing group. There's about 300 people in our writing group now. So you can join that all through the website. I do have social media, but I am starting to really despise social media.
Me too.
Getting really fed up with Twitter, but I am magpie_Richie on there. And then on Instagram, I'm just Richie Billing.
All right. Well, Richie, this has been fun. I had a great time at chatting with you about your book. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It was really fun.
Chatting with Richie was so much fun. He's just a breath of fresh air. We had a great time chatting about Prize Lament. Go ahead and check out his book. All of the links are in the description below. And next week, we have a very highly anticipated episode. It is the BIR. So the BIR is the Books I Read. I've been doing Books I Read episodes forever, not necessarily on the podcast, but I used to have them in a written blog. Then I had them in video format for a little bit. And now I'm bringing it back to Read It With Whiskey. So tune in next time to hear about all the books that I read in 2022. Talk to you soon. You've been listening to an episode of Read It With Whiskey. I'm your host, Laura Gentinen, and I want to personally say thank you so much for listening. Your support of the podcast means so much to me, and I would love to get to know you. Hop on over to Instagram and follow us at Read It With Whiskey. Please chime in on this episode's post, share it on your social media and with your friends, and come back next time to hear more from self-published authors. I'll talk to you soon.